Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes.
This one.
Yep. It builds you up nicely. We're starting. Hey, stop it. Turn off your phone.
Well, I was trying to warm up
your
voice.
You're going.
Oh, not yet. I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm not. No. Now I go now.
Here we go.
Welcome to Penn Sunday School, broadcasting live from Show Creator Studio South. Today it's me, Pip the Magic Dragon, filling in for Matt Donnelly. And we're going to be talking about my book and nothing else. Also, Andy Gladwin and Handsome Jack are here.
Go!
That's right, Andy Gladwin and Handsome Jack are here. But now, your host, Preach in Love, is Penn Jillette. Oh, I mean, what, 6 out of 10 maybe for that one?
I would say, maybe. I mean, let me tell you something, Piff. It depends on whether we're grading on a curve. If we are grading to actually doing a good intro, that was pure suck. But you're going against the memories of Godot and Matt Donnelly, and at that, you might be 9 out of 10.
Yeah, from over here on the couch, I think Donnelly's out of a job.
I just think I've had better, you know? And
yeah.
I think that if we, what we should do, here's an episode.
Okay.
It's just Piff's intros. it's like one of those sitcoms where they do the best ofs.
Yeah.
And it's just Piff's intros. Well, nothing but laugh tracks and commercial breaks. And
what I think is interesting about today's show is that we have two winners of Fool Us on the show, and neither of them is you. That's what I think is
I won Fool Us.
What's that?
I won Fool
you
Us.
Did.
Because you gave us a pity trophy.
Yes, we did.
And honestly, I can't look at that trophy with any sort of pride and accomplishment. Every time I see it, it's just a reminder of my failure. And you know what I did to it? I stuck it in the flamingo. We've got a big cabinet with Piff memorabilia, and I stuck it there because I didn't want to look at it anymore.
Yeah. It was not a pity trophy.
Oh my God. Come on.
Well, it was a pity trophy.
Right.
You got a book out, Piff.
I got a book, and I'm here with the two people who are semi-responsible for it. Mildly responsible for it. Let's go through them in great detail. Handsome Jack edited the book under his pen name, Lovick. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you've had much experience of writing a book, Pen, but what happens is... They give you an editor. Now, what an editor does is an editor says, hey, have you written the book yet? And that's all the editor does, apparently, when it's Handsome Jack. They just ring you up and they go, have you written more of the book yet? And then when you say yes, they go, good. And if you say no, they say, you should write more of the book now.
Yeah. My editors, I've written 11 books.
And what did your editors do?
And three of them were New York Times bestsellers.
Yeah.
And on none, and I repeat, none of those books did anybody say to me, have you written yet? They always said to me, your deadline's not for another 6 weeks. That's what they said to me.
All right.
On this week's episode of Rewriting History.
and what did the editor do then? Talk me through the exact process of the editor.
Well, I worked with editors given to me by the publisher. I didn't think they beat me up enough. So for my later books, I hired the editor myself. And the editor goes through and says, I don't understand what's happening here. I don't understand this particular joke. Here's your plot holes that you need to fill up. You need to justify this. This section is stronger. Can you expand that? This section is weaker. Can you cut that down? And I don't like this whole chapter.
Right.
And then I went through and worked on all those things.
Well, that sounds like quite a process. My editor... rang me up and said, hey, can I come and stay in Las Vegas at your house for a bit? And then I said, yes. And then my editor said, we should work on the book while I'm there. And I said, yes. So my editor arrived and said, have you written any of the book yet? And I said, no, I thought we were going to work on that when you arrived. And then my editor was like, well, I've got to go now and see Penn and Teller. And then my editor got back from seeing Penn and Teller and said, have you written any more of the book yet? And I said, no, because I thought we were going to do it together. And then my editor says, well, now I'm going back to L.A. early.
That's the way it worked?
That's the way it worked.
But I'll tell you, and I want to say this very sincerely, I knew I would love the book because I do not believe one should be objective about one's friends. Whenever anybody says to me, you know, my friend is in this play and I'm really, really objective about them and they're really good, I say, fuck you. They're not your friend.
Right.
I say anybody that I like who's in anything or does anything, I love it.
Right.
On top of that, sometimes I see things that are not within just that love of the person's heart. For instance, I got the book by Pip, and the second I knew you were writing a book with Handsome Jack, who's also a friend of mine, I knew there's no doubt I'm going to love that book.
With is a very strong word.
Very strong word. Yeah. In spite of.
That's the perfect word. That's what it should be. It should be Piff the Magic Dragon, written by Piff the Magic Dragon, in spite of John Lovick.
It was actually the reverse process. You edited Lovick's gags throughout the whole book.
Oh, yeah.
You were his editor, mostly.
Yeah, I had a lot of work to do on his contributions.
Book would have been out 2 years ago if you didn't have to rewrite my jokes.
But I got the book, already loving it, and I sat down and I intended to read it eventually, you know?
Yeah.
And I sat down in a really nice, comfortable chair with a nice cup of Constant Comment tea, because although the English are appalled by that kind of tea, when I was a rube, I guess I still am, from Massachusetts, and I went to visit Teller, who was sophisticated in New Jersey and had a job. I was still in high school. I got there and we sat down to talk and he made me a cup of tea. And in my life, my 17 years alive, no one had ever said, let's sit down and talk and have a cup of tea. And he made me Constant Comment tea, which is a kind of tea that has clove in it, which I think the English find repulsive.
And I'm ordering it off Amazon as we speak.
And Teller and I sat down and had a pot of tea. He made a pot of tea. You know, my mother had tea occasionally by putting a tea bag in the bag. But that was when she wanted to be very, very hoity-toity, maybe three times a year. And we had a box of Salada tea in our cupboard that was there my entire life. The one box. It was never used up. But Teller had this box of Costa Comment tea in a tin, I believe, and he made us. So when I want to be sophisticated, I make some Costa Comment tea. So I made a pot of Costa Comment tea, and I sat in a chair.
Decaf or?
I always drink decaf. And I had I made a pot of Costa Comment tea, and I sat down in my reading chair. Now, I only read electronically now. There's very few exceptions, but this is a book that's not available electronically. And I opened up the book. And I also usually don't like books that stray from just text at all. I don't want books with pictures in them. And I don't want books with fancy shit. Just give me the text and the information and I'll just read it. But I sat down and the exceptions to this, and you're going to be blown away by this. The exceptions to I don't like books on paper really come down to two books. One by Piff. And one by Nobel laureate Bob Dylan.
Oh.
Okay?
So maybe there's a chance of the Nobel for me.
But I'll just tell you, Bob's book, I think, was $150. How much is yours?
$65, okay. I think.
So half the price, still there.
Half price.
So I opened up your book. It was beautiful light streaming. It was a perfect experience. And I started reading the book with complete joy in my heart. Now, I'm not a person. I'm very different than a lot of people that you might know because I don't thumb through the book and say, oh, there's a nice picture. Oh, look.
Here's something that I've heard a lot, and people have admitted to it. Oh, thanks for the book. I went straight to the back and looked at the acknowledgments. Thanks for including me. I've heard that of like five or six people. I'm like, wait, you just go straight to the back. You got acknowledgements. I better be in here. Oh, I am. I'll write to him and tell him thanks.
Okay, I didn't do that. But then again, for me, I was so pleased and shocked by this. You don't have to go far in the book before I'm mentioned.
Yes.
Because I do write the foreword.
Yes.
And there is a picture of me very early on.
Very early.
But I open this book in this beautiful light with this nice tea seeping that I know repulses you, Andy. But I have a little...
Genuinely does repulse me.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Me too.
Yeah. Because you just want a nice, robust Pekoe, right?
Yeah. And I'm really missing home now. For the first... I've been here a month and you are now making me miss home.
I've just ordered some of this tea to try.
Yeah. You like a nice Pekoe tea with a little bit of, mostly dark, but a little bit of a red tinge, right?
That's right. And you can't do it in America. It's something about your milk. It makes the tea taste different.
Well, the idea of having milk and tea, I've never really grooved on. But I will tell you, milk and coffee and milk and tea are two very different things. Milk and tea is what started it. And milk and tea is an actual chemical reaction that does not only give you the two tastes, but the actual tannic acid in the tea changes. When you have the lactic acid, they become a different thing. Whereas milk and coffee does nothing chemically. It is just a whitening agent that softens the bitterness somewhat. So the idea that taking from putting milk in tea and putting it into coffee is fucking insane. But I put milk in neither, okay? I like my tea just like tea. And I'm sorry to repulse you with my tea, but you have to understand it's a sentimental love of my partner, Teller. From 50 years ago, you know, and I think that excuses it somewhat. And also the fact that you grew up with tea and I didn't. So there's family memories of you with tea that we didn't have because remember, I'm from Western Massachusetts. So all of my fond memories are of opiates. That's what everybody in my whole neighborhood did was opiates. So that's what you do. If you want a picture, when I say Massachusetts, you picture Cambridge, right?
Yeah.
First thing comes to mind. And then when you want to go on the lower side, you picture Dorchester, if you're that far along. But you never picture Western Massachusetts. And to allow you to picture Western Massachusetts, simply think of Kentucky. That's where I'm from. Mack King, Lance Burton, Penn Jillette, same exact neighborhood. Okay. But that being said, I opened the tea and I started to open up the book. And then it's kind of a twofold thing, which is, I love this book. I love this book. I like this book. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. I know exactly what you're saying. Wow, I can't wait. Oh, God. This is my buddy. They're going to be really, oh, they were really good. I tell you, we asked the publicist to work on our show.
Uh-huh.
They were so difficult to get to talk to and blah, blah. Eventually, we got them to the show. So after a month of them being difficult, and we do a meet and greet afterwards, they run out of the theater. They run up to me and go, oh my God, this show was really good. And I'm like, yeah, I know. That's what we've been telling you. And he says, no, you don't understand. It's really good. And I said, no, I completely understand.
Well, that, it's really good, but there's a lot of things that I found fascinating. You have a balance in this book that you very rarely see. As a matter of fact, I tried to think of another example of it in a book that's written first person. There is a balance of ambition and confidence with a true humility. Now, I'm pulling out the comedy now. The comedy, of course, plays into this and makes that happen. But that combination is so inspiring. Because often, if you read Salvador Dali's books, for instance, the gag on them is his confidence and his big dick swinging and no humility whatsoever. That's kind of fun. Then you see other books that have a great deal of humility, but it feels fake because it's not coupled. Well, why the fuck is this guy writing a book if he's so fucking humble? You have the combination of the two things in a perfect balance that's really inspiring. The book could be called How to Be Incredibly Successful Without Being an Asshole. That's what the book has in that balance. And that's what I believe virtually every other magic book lacks. Now, Andy, you've published a lot of magic
books. How many books?
And
like 100 books now, I think.
100 books. And I would believe that 99 of those books are by assholes. Can you say that?
These assholes are my authors, so they're lovely people.
Okay, sure. but we can look and make eye contact, and you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what this book has also, and there's a guy, and you know about him, and don't say his name, even though you know it. Can you promise me that?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a guy who would come to my show back when I was in San Francisco with the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society, and he said, I'm having a lot of trouble putting together my juggling show. Could I come and watch your show? Okay. And this guy came to the show on my dime. He's getting Annie Oakley's, you know, comps. He's getting Annie Oakley's, and he's coming in, and he is using a tape recorder, and he is taking notes. Okay. And everybody, and I mean everybody, Teller, Weir, the producers, the person working the bar, the tech people, my friends that would come to the show said, he is stealing your act. And I would say, no, he's coming to the show to learn how I put together my act so he can go on his own and do better. Okay? And I'm not doing a comparison here. I am doing a comparison, but I don't mean at the same level. Lenny Bruce, I listened to those records and I memorized them. And I never intended to do Lenny Bruce routines on stage. I memorized them and the George Carlin records so I could get how you put rhythms together, how you breathe, how you do that stuff. I watched the waterless cookware shows at fairs probably 25 times, took notes and memorized them, how they sold this cookware, because I liked the sound of their voices and the rhythm, and I wanted to learn to hit that. That's what I thought this guy was doing. Turns out he did my whole act on The Tonight Show. Not important. What's important is...
Wait, can you tell us what your mom said to you? Because I think that's the greatest thing that's ever been said.
Everybody wanted me to sue him.
Right.
And
how old were you?
Oh, you want that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 21 years old, 22 years old, and I said to my mom, I've worked my whole life on this. And she said, you're 22. that was her whole answer. She said, write new stuff. And I said, no, but this is all. She said, write new stuff. She said, if you consider yourself a writer, write new stuff.
Yeah.
My mother was not bothered at all by someone stealing my whole act. She said, if he can't write and you can't write, you write new stuff. He doesn't. Everybody else wanted me to sue him. My mother said, take that time and write new stuff because that'll be more fun than suing him.
Right.
And also you'll feel better about yourself. So when you read this book, I believe that when you read other magic books, you look through them and say, what can I take here and put in my act? Which I will say is the reason the books are written, and that's fine. But in this book, if someone reads it properly, you read through the book, and this worked for me, by the way. I'm not talking about novices. I've had some experience in magic, and I read this book and go, it's fascinating the way he put this routine together. The dead ends are fascinating. And maybe, oh yeah, the vibe on this seems right. And I was making notes on stuff I wanted to do that I will defy anyone who sees me do these to say, oh, that came from Piff's book.
Right.
And that's what you're looking for. And the thing that you do in the other magic books written by assholes who you like, Andy.
I genuinely do like
I know people. You do. I know you do. I have no doubt that you're not lying and you know that I'm not lying. Right? We know that. We're both telling the truth. They say, here is a piece of apparatus that I came up with. And they show you this thing that they came up with that is useless. You either make that thing exactly, okay,
right,
or you don't do anything with it. You show the wrong ideas you had,
yeah,
and these give me an idea of when I'm having someone else build a prop. That it's fine to send them down dead ends.
Yeah.
But someone else reading this book who maybe has touched a prop off stage in their life would have some idea of how they would build stuff. It's really astonishing the way the book is put together and really shows so different than I set my sights on getting on America's Got Talent.
Right.
So different to say, what the plan was, because even the plan, which is not true, that you intended to go on and come in second, even that plan has a reality base that is just beautiful. And the discussion you have about doing, I don't know what kind of word you want to use, slightly outside the bell curve jokes,
right,
like the jokes you did about harming your dog.
Oh, yeah.
And then your comment about watching a comic do jokes about cancer with your mother who had cancer.
Right.
That is the most, as the person who made The Aristocrats, what you did in one page in that book may be what I tried to do with 100 comedians, an hour and a half, and 5 years of my life, and trying to force Provenza to do anything. Because my basic, the way I made The Aristocrats was I called up Paul Provenza and said, have you made The Aristocrats? He said, no. I said, get to work on it. Then I would call him up and say, have you made The Aristocrats? He said, no. I said, get to work on it. I said, hey, Provenza, I'm coming to L.A. I'll be staying at your house. Have you made The Aristocrats? No. I'm going to go out and see Handsome Jack do a show. Then I would come back and say, have you made The Aristocrats? He said, no. I said, I'm going back to Vegas early. That was essentially what I did on The Aristocrats. The book is astonishing, Biff. It really is.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for reading it.
Yeah. By the way, none of your other friends will.
And I'm fine with that. You know, it could go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. You know, you could read it. We could meet up for coffee and you're more distant than you used to be. You know, mm-hmm. Suddenly I paid for coffee and and you've got espressos rather than the full Americano so that you can leave early. And I'm like, oh, guess he didn't like the book.
Yeah, it happened.
It took a long time. But I will say that without the help of one of these two people here, it would never have got done.
What the fuck did Andy do? Tell me that.
Literally the book. So we, now look, Lubbock and I, we spent too long together.
Mm-hmm. Anyone who has spent any time with Handsome Jack would be able to say that same thing.
Exactly. I don't think you have them here, but do you have like any sort of like, I guess you got planes, right? Over here. In England, whenever we get on and off trains, you have to go through a ticket barrier and there's a guy there or a girl watching you swipe your ticket. Mm-hmm. And that would be too long to spend with John Lubbock. You know, it's a fraction of the time that they spend checking your ticket on a plane.
That's interesting because it's the time you spend swiping the ticket, but it feels like the time it takes when you're picked by TSA for special screening.
Yeah.
It feels that way, although it happens the other way. It's a fascinating thing that all of our experience with Handsome Jack has to do with travel, trying to get the fuck away from Handsome Jack.
Trying to put as much distance between me and Handsome Jack. So we spent far too long together, but then we finally finished this text. I think you know Zach Beyer, who works on my show. He's a Squire cameraman.
Yeah.
And he's an incredible filmmaker, photographer, and he does all our trailers. He did the trailer for the book, which is amazing.
It is good. It's good.
He did, and he took all the photos. Under much duress.
Now, will he be the one that when you edit the book launch takes out my references to Putin and Nazis?
Nobody's doing that.
Okay.
So, you know, since you mentioned the photos.
Yes.
Are you done? I can wait. Were you in the middle of a story?
Yeah, I was saying something interesting. No, please come in with some banal comment that's related to nothing.
It's all about the process of the book, but you finish your...
No, but honestly, let me step aside.
Okay.
In the hope that I get hit by an oncoming train.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I just want to talk a little bit about what the process is. It's like working with Piff. So we finish writing the book. We need to take some photos. Mm-hmm. So we schedule a photo shoot. I'm going to come to Vegas for the photo shoot. I clear my schedule so I can come to Vegas for the
How long did it take?
How long did what take?
Clearing your schedule.
He had to collect train tickets. That's, he's busy.
That part of the story is not important.
That seems the vital piece.
So I clear my schedule, going to come to Vegas. I'm going to leave at,
What'd you have for breakfast? Come on, get with the story.
What's the story about?
Who cares what time you leave?
Clearing your schedule. You're opening your schedule. You're seeing it.
The schedule is now open.
No, the
orange juice and grapefruit juice.
No, this is, Your Honor, the relevance will become clear in a moment.
Okay, asked and answered.
So I'm going to leave at 8 in the morning to drive to Vegas. Mm-hmm. At midnight, I get a text from Puff. Oh, we can't do the photo shoot. And he's known for a week that we can't do the photo shoot. But he lets me know midnight the night before we leave. Oh. So a couple months later, we repeat this process. We pick a day. I'm going to come out. The night before midnight, he cancels. So we finally have a third photo shoot scheduled. I come to town. I'm staying at Piff's house. Photo shoot's the next morning. And I say, what time are we going to do this photo shoot? Oh, before I said, okay, make sure we pick a day for this photo shoot. We've got all day because this is going to take a long time. We got all day. You got nothing else going on. So that night I say, what time are we starting the photo shoot tomorrow, Piff? Says 10 a.m. I said, sounds great. We'll get to the studio or the theater at 10 a.m. Go, sure. So I wake up the next morning at 9. I wait.
Jeff for breakfast.
Around 10:20, Piff rolls out of bed. He rolls out of bed at 10:20.
You were sleeping together?
He rolls out of his bed.
That's what you require when working on a book, right?
Right.
Yeah. So he rolls out of bed at 10:20 for this photo shoot where
we've
we're supposed to be at
choose.
The theater at 10. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, so we're going to get started a little bit late. And we sit down for a cup of coffee. And Pip goes, I just remembered I have a doctor's appointment today. I'm like, okay, what time's doctor's appointment? It's 11:30. 11:30, okay. All right, well, what time can we get to the theater to start the photo shoot? And he goes, well, I should be there by 12:30. I'm thinking, okay, 12:30 if we shoot.
Half an hour doctor's appointment.
Well, that's what you said. You said the doctor's appointment was 11:30.
I have no memory of any of this, which doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah.
I should hasten hand. It just means I have no memory of this.
So I get to the theater at 12:30. Piff shows up at 12:30.
Oh, half an hour doctor's
Piff shows
appointment.
At 12:30.
Very fast.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well, you're still alive, Piff. Get out of here.
We're starting to talk about the photo shoot. I said, well, we need to shoot part of it at, this part of the theater, part of it in this part of the theater, or maybe you have another place. The photographer has something in mind. Well, where's the photographer? Oh, he's going to get here at 2. He's going to get here at 2. Okay. And so I'm starting to think, all right, well, we shoot into the evening. We can still finish everything. I said, how late? So I say, okay, we shoot in the evening. We can get this done. I said, how late can we stay here? Can we stay here to midnight if we want? And Pip's like, well, the show's at 7. I'm like, the show's at 7? What time we got to clear out? 5:30. So now, instead of having all day to shoot photos, we're down to 3.5 hours to shoot photos. So we had 3.5 hours to shoot
and
photos.
You shot all the photos?
No, we did not shoot all the photos because we only had 3.5 fucking hours, which is my fucking point.
At this point, I would like to add the following piece of information.
Don't worry, we can edit that out. Yeah.
It was only when Lovick left that we actually got to shoot the photos. The photos were done downstairs in the basement without the presence of Lovick, and the whole thing passed without incident.
Now, Andy, you were watching over this whole. Did you engage their services to write this book, or wait till they were done?
Well, so Lovick secretly hates me, and this is the first time he's ever called me for advice. Like, how do I get Piff to take pictures? And I think I just said, just leave him to it, and that's what happened.
I want to know the whole process. Did you say, I'm going to buy a Piff book, or did Piff finish the book and you say, I'll buy it?
I convinced him to write the book. We went for a coffee when I was in Vegas for a while, and somehow I convinced him, and then a pandemic happened, which kind of made him feel guilty about actually having time to write it. And then we got out of the pandemic, and he'd written the book, but I don't think you liked it, right?
It was terrible. I wrote a first draft. You see, this is the real issue. I wrote a first draft that Lovick edited and was like, okay, it's done. And I was like, it's a piece of shit. And Lovick's like, no, it's fine, it's done. I was like, this is a piece of shit. So then he starts wanting to come and take photos of a piece of shit. Uh-huh. I'm like, I think I'm busy that day. I'm going to the doctors. Right? So then I refused to do anything more with it. And at some point, I started...
I just want to say, Andy, this is, I want to talk to the one grown-up here. Has any money changed hands with anybody at this point?
Not yet.
Not a penny.
But the book was very much like the standard magic book you were talking about at this point. So I think if we'd have finished it, it would have just been a forgettable book, yeah, right? It didn't have Piff personality. It was nothing. Just, here's some tricks.
So then I don't know what happened. Suddenly, I got busy. And I started writing the book. I know what happened. I had to flesh out the opening chapter, which is a story about how I got to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I built up a momentum doing that, and I carried that momentum through the book and got to the point when I went on vacation for 2 weeks to Mexico to a very nice spa-y hotel thing, which is my favorite. It's just being at a hotel and lying by the pool, and I have like the bucket of ice where you have the champagne, and I have a bottle of sparkling water in there.
I like that.
That's my favorite vacation. And I just sat there with my laptop and just wrote the shit out of the book. And then... Lovick eventually started.
Did he come down to Mexico?
No. He would have melted.
Lovick eventually what?
He eventually, he started editing the book at that late stage when it was like 90% done.
Whoa. You start editing a book when it's 100% done, you dipshit.
Listen, I'm not the one who started editing it at 90%. So why don't you dipshit that dipshit? Dipshit.
First draft gets done, then you edit.
Well, the first draft didn't need editing.
Okay.
I was like, you know when like...
The first draft didn't need reading.
Yeah, you know when like a hedgehog gets run over?
Yeah.
You don't... That's not the time to try and put it back together.
I don't think I do know when a hedgehog gets run
over. In England, it gets like paste. It's like a smeared on the road. It's like a paste. That's the time to make
now,
pate out of it.
I don't ever care about this shit at all. But the book is beautiful.
With that.
Now, who made that book beautiful?
I'm going to tell you. It's a combination of two things. Of all the photos that I've had taken, I've been lucky to work with like these amazing photographers over the years. All the photographers, all of the artwork that they've done, because I can't draw for shit. Can you draw?
No, I can't. I can't even read my own writing.
When I was in...
you have beautiful handwriting, don't you?
Me? No, I can barely read it.
Yeah, I can't read mine.
When I was in school, my art teacher, you know, said an incredibly inspiring talk on my first lesson. Anyone can draw. All you've got to do is put in the time. All you have to do. And I put in the time because I really wanted to learn how to draw. Over and over again, I would try my hardest at art school. I got to the year when you have to pick your last 2 years subjects, which is the ones you get tested on. And I said, you know what? I've given this art class my all. I want to take this class and get graded on it. And my art teacher said, no, you can't draw. And I was like, but you said everyone can. And the art teacher said, I was wrong. You cannot draw. So, but I've worked with all these really super talented people. So I was able to give Andy all these incredible photos. And he did the most badass layout. And every day it would be like, you know, I spent some time in Dubai, and every day they're building a monorail. And every day I would be in the same traffic jam, and the monorail was like 30 meters further on every day. Mm-hmm. They would just go boom, 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 boom. It was almost going faster than the
traffic.
It's
amazing what you can do with no human rights,
right,
an incredible amount of money, no compassion and slavery. You can get a lot done.
Yeah, and well, you did. They did. They did, and we did. So Andy, every day, would send in like 50 pages, 75 pages, 100 pages. And he laid out the text beautifully.
So you did the layout, Andy?
He did the layout. He did the design scheme.
It's really a beautiful job.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Because usually books that look that pretty suffer in clarity.
Well, you know, my secret is I always try and match the layout to the personality of the author. Mm-hmm. And that's actually hard with most like card trick books because card tricks don't have personality.
No.
But Piff was just like, do whatever you want.
You can just say broader. Magicians don't have personality.
I was being nice. These people are my customers. I know.
Of course they are.
But how you think you're going to lose customers? On Penn Sunday School? Whatever happened to Vanishing Ink? Ended in one episode of Penn Sunday School. Nobody bought from him again.
Ever.
They all went back to Hank Lee.
But he's not around anymore. But Piff was like, just let me do whatever I want, which was the dream for me. I've always wanted that with a book layout, and he's the only one to do
it. It's about the square shape is really nice.
Andy's idea.
And the quality of the paper is really nice. Andy's You can sell it for $65.
I got so much shit for that square shape. People like around my circle of friends hated it. They were like, this is the wrong format. But I was just, it felt right because it's a coffee table book. It opens, it stays open. And it's just really important to me that it felt like a book that Piff would have done if he could design books.
Right, which I can't.
That's why I did it.
So you actually do hands-on design stuff?
Yeah, I designed.
I mean, did you have the program open?
Yes, and I was watching it.
Around?
I was watching
you it. You actually did that, Ian?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can lay out a book quicker than Lovett can tell a story. So it's pretty good for me to just...
the Roman Empire.
So
they could kill 1,500 Christians by the time it takes Lovett to tell a story.
The only slight disagreement we have was
Mommy, Daddy, please don't fight.
I wanted to put my trick where I did not fool you with, which I did not fool you with, even though you believe I fooled you with the card changing one piece at a time into another card. But I just could not be fucked to write up how to do it. Because it's like you get into phalanges, you know, of fingers. And I'm just like, I don't want to be like, take your middle phalange of your left pinky finger. You know, I just couldn't deal with it. So in the end, what I believe I, or possibly Lovick and I, possibly decided to do, was to take a photo of each step from the front and from the back, and then just put the front on the right and the back on the left, and you just have to flip through them, figure out how it's done. Mm-hmm. That requires one photo per page.
But it's also, and this is stuff I never, ever notice, it's also so beautifully lit. And so beautifully shot, and the color saturation is just perfect.
Well, that was because Lovett went away and left us to it.
And the glossiness of the book, that becomes, I really think that this is not a book for magicians. I really think this is a book, your sights should be set much wider. I'm going to actually talk to Handsome about this. I've wanted to do a show for a long time for the general public that was a magic lecture. Because I think there is a, I just said this and now someone else will do it. I know who it is too, the guy from the Tonight Show. but I think that magicians have the opposite problem of many, many comedians who, comedians are always looking for universals and not delivering. Like, you know, comedians go on stage and go, hey, you know when you take like a hamster and stick an SD rocket in its ass and then light it on fire and fire it up, and when it lands and it's been blown up, you take a little bit of the paste and put it on your tongue? Who's with me on this? You know, they do stuff like that. Who watches every episode of Seinfeld? No one does. Shitheads, shut up. Now, magicians, I believe, the good ones, the really good ones and the good writers, and there are three of them, and they're at Magic Inc. But those people write books that they think are for a limited audience, whereas they really are universals. So these are specifics that are universals. You know, when you read the Piff book, if you've never, ever done a magic trick before and never aspired to do magic, first of all, God bless you. But second of all, if you've never done that and you read through the process of how that's put together, I believe it is inspiring and poetic for someone outside of magic.
Well, my pitch is to go onto a late night show, like a Fallon or whatever, do a trick from the book, and then have Fallon or whoever pull the book out from under the desk and say, if you want to do these tricks, buy a Piff the Magic book. From Piff to Met, and then have me lunge over the desk, you know, like Kevin Costner style, trying to like save Whitney Houston and say, no, don't show them that. They'll know all my secrets. Whatever happens, don't go to PiffTheMagicBook.com and purchase this book for $69.95, which gives away all my secrets.
But you understand that's a very different point than the one I just made. As a matter of fact, it's almost contrary. No. It's almost like you weren't listening to a fucking word I said. It's a little like that.
Now you know what the last 3 years have been like for me, Pat.
You know what happened?
What?
I did a perfect pitch to sell books to the public. Uh-huh. That's what I just did.
Right, right, exactly. Right? You did.
You were the one who was encouraging the public to read them.
You're right, you're right.
So I just gave you the bridge to achieve your desire. And what do I get for that?
What you get for that is knowing that Penn and Teller, with their book, are going to be doing that on Fallon, where you won't get booked.
Well, here's the thing. Luckily for me, I know that Teller is helping writing the book.
Helping write what book?
The Penn and Teller books.
He is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
So basically, by the time you finish that book, network television won't exist. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
So it's either me gets on that show or nobody does.
But let's talk about, Handsome, you are working with me.
Yes.
Trying to get me to write certain stuff.
That is
Would you describe that experience as opposed to Piff?
Does the phrase diametrically opposed mean anything to you?
Well, you'll see this, Andy, if we ever work together, which is when exactly hell will be freezing over. That exact moment, you'll notice that when you say you need 20 pages done by next Thursday,
you get
50 pages
an
on
hour
Tuesday.
Later. Yeah. Yeah.
Or an hour later.
An hour later. Yeah.
One of my favorite things is working with Penn on TV, because you're surrounded by a jaded crew and you say to them, okay, it's very important when you talk to Penn about what you want, you ask him to give you multiple takes and you give him a number of multiple takes you need, because he'll do it. And then we're like, bullshit. Then we're like, no, that's not going to happen. And not only that, Penn will give you the first take will be perfect. The second take will be a different take on that take and perfect. The third take will be a different take on the previous two takes and perfect. And you see it all the time, and you see the crew every single time I've worked with you on TV. Everyone's jaw is on the floor because it's multiple takes, different interpretations, perfect every time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
It's amazing.
Yeah, the difference between working with you, Penn, and working with Piff is, like, this morning, Piff and I couldn't go out for a coffee and donuts without yelling at each other.
Oh, that's true.
What on earth? Now the book is done, and everybody listening to this understands, oh, I get it. Andy did the book.
That's true as well.
But what do you have to fight about now?
Have you spent time with this guy?
Yes, but what do you have to fight about?
Well, spend time with that guy.
I have spent time with him.
And you don't fight with him?
No.
No, we don't fight.
Oh,
you and
God.
I, you seriously, coffee and donuts, we were yelling at each other.
And you know why? Because you said to me, you know
what? What did you disagree on?
One of the reasons, one of the things that you said to me, which I thought was, I may have taken this wrong. Actually, now I'm thinking about it. But one of the things you said to me was, you know, you do these amazing things. Let's say, like, the time you did the upside down thing on Saturday Night Live, you do these great things. These are like some of the most important moments of your career. And you just want to go out the next day to have coffee and donuts with Teller and say, wasn't that thing great yesterday? And you can't because Teller's back in the workshop.
Exactly.
So I took these boys out for coffee and donuts this morning. And I should have just been Andy. It should have been Andy. It should have just been Andy. But the thing is, like, Lovick's staying at my house and he doesn't have a car, so he had to come with us. And then it was just like, he's just arguing with everything that was... What did you do to...
Okay, so Andy ordered...
Oh, I know exactly what it was. So Andy orders a donut, a breakfast sandwich. But he says, I'm vegetarian. Do you have anything without the meat in? And they said, well, we can do the sausage one. Are you okay with the egg? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine with egg. Okay. So we can do the sausage one. We have to just remove that. So then they take a little bit of time, not that long, but 30 seconds to a minute, figuring out how to remove sausage from sausage sandwich.
It took two employees 10 minutes to figure out how to do this.
That is completely not true. It didn't take 10 minutes.
It took about a minute while they were working out how to use the system.
Right.
Yeah.
So that took
longer than that. Two employees. It took several minutes.
And you are asking
I thought that was worthy of comment.
And I was extremely polite about it, and they were doing a great job.
Listen, The other thing is, you're asking them to take the reason to be out of this sandwich.
Right, sure, yes.
Can I have a sausage sandwich without the reason? That's what you're saying.
I go out with Glenn Ally all the time, and Glenn Ally, the long-suffering Glenn,
yeah,
who's been working with me for 30 years, Glenn goes and says, I would like a club sandwich, please. You know your turkey club? I like the turkey club sandwich. I would like it without turkey and without bacon, please.
Yeah.
No. So he's getting a lettuce sandwich. So,
yeah, right. So that's what happens, right? Okay. So then he says,
that part of the story is not important.
It's very important. It's very important because they've worked.
Whose sandwich is this?
This is Andy's. Andy's. Then Lovett goes up there, says, can I have the same as Andy? And they go, sure. Blip, blip, blip. Right? His whole thing was, it took them like, did you see how long it took them to do my sandwich? No, zero
that,
time.
That was
your
not my
sandwich
point.
For 10 minutes. That was exactly your point.
It was not my point was, it should not take two employees 10 minutes to figure out how to put a sandwich in the system. That was my entire point.
No.
There's a bit you didn't see, Piff. Lovett looks me dead in the eyes and goes, we have to have a serious conversation. And I'm like, what have I done?
The other thing was, his sandwich, they took off the arugula for some reason. Uh-huh. And I said to him, do you want arugula on his sandwich? And he's like, what? And I pointed at the machine. They've taken away your arugula. And he's like, what? And I'm like, I'm just saying, do you want arugula? And he's getting arugula with his sandwich. Do you want arugula? And he's like, what? And then the sandwich has come. And he's like, there's no arugula on mine.
Have any of you, and I guess Andy's out of this, but have any of you ever been out to eat with me when I looked at anything before I put it in my mouth?
No.
If you could take anything off my sandwich, you could put a kitten into my sandwich after I ordered a vegan sandwich, and I would just eat the kitten in the sandwich and never notice it. I never, ever pay any attention to what I eat. I believe I've never sent anything back to the kitchen. And I believe I've never complained.
I don't think I've ever sent anything back to the kitchen. I did go through a period where I had a laminated car. This is when I first moved to America. I would start the meal, the waiter would come over, and I'd be like, hi, here's $50. And they'd be like, oh, okay. And I was like, look, if you can just not do the following things, then I'll give you another $50 at the end of the meal. And it was things like, please don't ask me how the food is, because even if I hate it, I'm not going to tell you. And then I'm going to feel bad that I lied to myself. It was all these different rules. And
I want to hear more of these rules.
What else was it? I don't know. I have to look them up now. I remember that one specifically. And that made going out for dinner very expensive, but pleasant.
Yeah, very pleasant.
Oh, that was another thing. Don't take away my plate when other people still have theirs.
Uh-huh.
Because we don't do that in England.
No.
It's just so weird. You just, oh, you finished that plate. God, we really need these. Oh, my God. Thank God you're finished. God, we got to go and wash this right away.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I do like my area in front of me clean when I'm done eating. So I think that may be.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I don't like stuff. But I also, you know what I don't like? Dining in your room at a hotel.
Hang on a second.
I don't want food in my room at the hotel.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Are you a quick eater?
I'm blindingly fast.
Yeah.
So you're telling me you're happy just to sit there with nothing, just nothing in front of you.
The only message being
that you should have finished by now.
No.
You're happy to sit there.
That is why God made bad decaf coffee.
Listen, if I'm sat there opposite you, uh-huh, and you've ordered whatever you've ordered and you just finished stuffing a kitten in your face.
A vegan kitten sandwich.
Yeah, yeah. And like the tail's still like wriggling and you're like suckling it in.
Huh, and that's a weird tasting radish.
And all I can hear is this muted meows. Meow, 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 meow. Right? And I'm there.
I can't belch on command. I would have done that.
I'm there, you know, like carving my whatever I've ordered, like some like Pekingese chihuahua something. And like delicately eating it like the Englishman that I am,
yeah,
with a knife and a fork, I start getting sweaty palms and going, oh man, Penn's finished his meal. I should really hurry up. Huh. Whereas if you got your plate there, I'm like, hey, no rush, boys.
Okay, next time I'll ask them to leave my plate next time that we go out to eat.
Well, you don't need to ask them because it'll be on my card,
okay,
which is laminated because it's a very messy environment in the kitchen.
You know, that was a juggling trick I've always wanted to do, and now because I'm vegan, I wouldn't do it, but I thought it'd be fabulous. A friend of mine, Chip Denman, said this thing to me that I thought was so beautiful. He said, my father could eat a whole chicken with a knife and fork beautifully and efficiently. He could get all the meat from that chicken. And I thought, wow, that would be a juggling act I'd like to see. A guy being served a small chicken, right?
Yeah.
All cooked. Say, watch this, knife and fork. I will never touch with my fingers. All the way through, all cut up perfectly and laid out. Like, you ever seen someone from Maine eat a lobster?
No.
It's a little disgusting, but it's perfect. They get every piece of meat out of the lobster. And by the way, if you're in Maine, which by the way, when you're eating a lobster, you're just eating a cockroach. And that's not clear to you until you become vegan and sit there having a dirt sandwich while everybody else at the table's eating lobster. You go, they're all eating giant cockroaches and I'm going to be sick. That happens. But if you say to a Maine person, you can say, and I've had this happen, I'm done with this lobster. When they fed you a whole live lobster, and you say, I'm done with this lobster, and they say, you didn't get any of the meat off it. And they'll say, and they'll then pull out an entire lobster's worth of meat out of the lobster you were done with. So I've always thought that in show business, there should be some demonstration. I mean, one of the definitions of genius, okay, which I really like, I forgot whose it is, might be Salvador Dali, I don't know. Maybe just because I said that earlier. He said, being a genius is doing what everybody else can do badly really well. And I thought, you know, there's certain things like eating corn on the cob or eating a small squab with a knife and fork that everybody tries and gets through, but no one's good at. I thought if someone came on stage with a buffalo hot wings and some blue cheese and ate that perfectly, getting all the meat off the bone without being messy at all, it would be an amazing act I would love to see.
I think that sounds like Teller's next bit.
Yeah. Except Teller can't really do anything.
Well, the last 50 years would beg to differ, yeah, with that.
Well, we actually did a thing this year with cutting a tomato really quickly and perfectly.
They did cutting a Mars bar on Seinfeld, didn't they?
I don't know. I watched 15 minutes of Seinfeld with Debbie Harry, and we both said, this is the worst thing we've ever seen. We can never watch this again. That's all I saw of Seinfeld.
Right.
And I like Jerry. I think he's great. And he's a great guy, too. But boy, that's not a show for me. What'd they do with the Mars bar?
Well, you don't know that, clearly.
What do you mean?
You don't know that Seinfeld is not a show for you.
How do I not know that?
Because you watch 15 minutes.
Right. How much do you need to watch?
A lot more than 15 minutes.
You do?
Yes, because...
So I have to watch the whole series?
No, not at all.
Before I can say,
not at all,
I didn't like watching this?
Not at all. I think you have to watch at least one or two of the best episodes from three seasons. So that's six episodes total. Okay, this is your commitment to Seinfeld. You watch the six best episodes, and after that, you can make up your mind. Because let me ask you this question.
Yes.
In your entire career... Have you ever done 15 minutes of which you are not entirely proud?
But let me just say,
just imagine,
okay,
Jerry Seinfeld was watching your show and saw just that 15 minutes,
okay,
with Debbie Harry, and he said to Debbie Harry, you know what, Debbie? I don't think we ever need to watch this again.
But it was also Debbie that started. Anyway, but she didn't like anything. Anyway, what are the chances that Jerry Seinfeld would come to one of my shows and just happen to see the worst 15 minutes I've done in my life?
Not zero. That's what the chances are. Not zero.
Well, I think you've just won this argument.
Well, there
completely.
You go.
Once you say not zero.
Yeah. But I think because Andy lives in another country.
You still live in another country?
Yeah, he's going to move to Vegas.
Piff keeps trying to convince me to move to Vegas. I think I will soon.
Where do you live now?
In the UK.
In the UK. London?
In the south, like 2 hours from London.
Okay.
Although, Piff fact, we used to live on the same street and we didn't know it.
Where's that?
Maidavale.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. But I just, before Andy goes back to London, I do think we've just given that credit of, it is what, like the thing I was going to say was, even when I wanted to print one photo per page, doubling the book's width, is that page count?
Thickness. Yeah. Or length.
How much percentage did they increase the price for us?
Oh, like close to 50%.
So when I added close to 50% price.
That's not actually true, but it's like, it was probably 20% extra. But the thing I couldn't get my head around is how many trees you were willing to destroy just to win an argument.
Well,
let's talk about this myth. Environmentally, paper is very little harm whatsoever to the environment because the trees that are forested for paper are trees that have been planted for paper.
Because they were bad.
That changes everything.
Yeah, then you did a good thing, Pip. You did good. Then exactly. I'm on your side.
They're the naughty trees. They're the trees that didn't learn at school. They didn't contribute to society, so they got harvested for paper.
Tree schools.
Yeah.
So the book is also. I haven't seen the deluxe version. Is the deluxe?
You know you're getting one.
I know I am. You told me.
Yeah.
And how much is the deluxe version?
$350.
$350. Yeah. I got to tell you, $65. For that, that was just said 65?
69. He doesn't know the price. 69.95.
70 bucks. So $70 for that book is really a good bargain.
Yeah.
That's really, really good.
And the deluxe version is really cool because it comes with a tacular, and that was the expensive part. So 350 sounds really expensive, but it was so hard to make a tacular to Piff's
exact
specs.
Well, you need to now tell people what a fucking tacular is.
I thought these people are Piff fans.
Well, some of them.
Congregation love Piff.
Used to be. Yeah.
Well, Piff, you should explain it.
It's a stand that you have all your magic on.
It's like a briefcase that you flip over and it turns into a little table.
It's a Harbin table,
yeah. Yeah.
Because more people know that than know Tacula. Yeah.
Thanks for relating it to the common man.
Excuse me for being accurate.
That actually should be what. Now, also, let's talk a little bit about footnotes. My favorite book. My favorite book by a living author, perhaps, because it's Moby Dick. But my favorite book is The Mezzanine.
By
Nicholson Baker.
I like The Mezzanine.
And The Mezzanine is the closest to the vibe of your book in places because of the ruminations in the footnotes. But you also have this great thing that happens in the footnotes, which is the editor and the author argue in the footnotes, which is really, really funny and good.
Yes. What was ironic about that was I wrote all those arguments between me and Lovick by having arguments in my head with Lovick.
Mm-hmm.
Arguments that I knew that I would have if he were there in person. Mm-hmm. Now, I did do some further research on this. I would then bring up one of these subjects and have the exact same argument I've written. So I knew them to be true.
So there's a prediction trick built
into that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's even a footnote on a footnote, which was so hard to design.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, you write something and you're like, well, hang on a minute. This needs clarification. Yeah,
exactly.
You know. But yes, at the end, Lovick pulled it out of the bag and he was a very good editor. While I was in Mexico finishing the book by the beach, he was a very good editor for the last 2 weeks. Is that true?
There's some truth to that.
Now, kidding aside, Handsome Jack did a lot of work on the book, didn't he?
Have you not listened to what we said? No, he literally just told me to do things, like write a book.
Because to me...
No, but then you're right. Once, finally, we got to the stage where the chapters were finished, and he would then go back to those... finished 100% finished chapters, and he would like make all the notes and ask all the questions in the last 2 weeks in Mexico. But no, my idea of an editor is somebody who comes, because this is my idea with any sort of creative process, because this is the only way I create. It's somebody who comes and hangs out with you while you come up with these ideas, and they go yeah and write them down. That's my dream. I hate being on my own in a room having to create. I hate it, and it doesn't work for me. Like, I'm writing a bit at the moment, for a show that is secret that may be happening. And every time I write it, I go, okay, fine, I've written it. And I go and I take it when I read it through with the actor who's doing it with me. And I'm like, nope, wrong. This is what it should say, blah, blah, blah. Until I'm like, and if I write stand-up, you know, I write on the page, it's garbage. It's when I'm on stage, the audience don't have to be there. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to be there. I just have to walk on stage and suddenly my head clicks into the right frame of mind and I can write perfectly, and then...
State-specific learning.
That's what it is, yes.
Okay.
So that's what you just described.
Wait. Is there a solution to this?
State-specific learning.
Just out of interest?
It's the reason Keith Richards could play guitar well when he was really, really high, because he practiced when he was really, really high.
So how do I...
So if you're feeling like you want to be on stage, you have to be on stage to do that.
Well, wait, there's no other... I thought it was a good solution to this.
No.
I thought you were going to be like, oh, what you need to do.
We were describing the problem.
What?
See, I love to write alone.
Now, why do you love to write alone?
I do.
But
I also understand completely what you're saying.
I just want to know, how long did it take you to build a fantasy land where an editor or someone comes, hangs out with you while you get ideas and goes, that's a great idea?
How long? Instantly. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And where do you think that exists in the universe, Piff?
In my head.
It exists exactly in the place that Donald Trump's apartment is 30,000 square feet.
It exists in the same universe where I didn't do anything on the book. Same universe.
You did 2 weeks on the book. Don't be so hard on yourself.
You know what Lovick's great at is like pulling out stuff that you want to talk about.
Teeth.
But normally, Lovick would give ideas to an author, and then they go, that's great, I'll write it. But you two would just argue for 2 weeks, and then eventually you'd listen to him.
Yeah, that's true. This is a big breakthrough moment for me here. Now that we've found out my issue with writing and work generally, state-specific learning, this is the point where you say, oh, well, what you need to do is...
I see. I find I'm in the perfect situation, because I have the best creative business partner who has ever lived. And believe me, if you had Teller as a business partner, all of your problems would go away. Because Teller does kind of do exactly what you want from an editor, but he's not an editor. He is an equal partner, and that's a different
thing. Right. And you're 100% correct. And I would like to tell you something that happened to me. We did this book launch, are we going to release bits of it?
Yeah, I think we're going to put it on the socials, put it on your YouTube as well.
Yeah, something like that. We'll do something like that. We did a book launch with you and Teller, very kindly agreed to be.
By the way, I told Mox, you know, my offspring, Moxie, we went to that, and we saw the book launch and how much work y'all had put into it. And I said, Mox, this is the amount of work you have to do right here.
Well, yeah, but we did an hour and a half streaming live show featuring Penn and Teller, Shin Lim, David Copperfield, and
Handsome Jack.
He did come in there. Right at the end when all the work had been done. Yeah. So Teller did a great bit where he read the book in various...
He did it very funny.
...scenarios. I wrote to him, I said, you stole the show, it was great. Mm-hmm. And he wrote back, which I will not repeat what he said, but he said some things to me that have basically given me nowhere to go in my career. he basically said, you've completed magic.
Huh?
And you know my prayer every night.
Yeah.
Dear Lord, please let me never know what Teller really thinks of me.
Yeah.
Turns out, when Teller really thinks something positive about me, I don't want to know that either.
Right, exactly.
Because you just go, well, now, what? Oh, shit, what am I going to do next? How's it going to be as good? Oh, no.
Yeah.
How am I going to win his approval next time? Oh, no. What's happening to me? Ah.
What I tell everybody, and... By the way, no one listens to me except Teller. I tell everyone, don't read anything with your name in it.
Right.
Now, the exception I made was for Piff book, which is also very rare for me. Yeah. I mean, Lou Reed's biography has my name in it. I won't read it. I don't read any article with my name in it, even if it's about someone else. And I'm starting to expand that to I won't read anything that has friends of mine's name in it.
Right.
People say... Because when you were on Broadway, you didn't want to see the bad reviews because you thought those would fuck me up,
right.
Fuck you up. And I say, no. Yes, I mean, the bad reviews will fuck you up, but the good reviews fuck you up more.
Yeah.
When someone says, this is what you're trying to do and you did it perfectly, and that wasn't what you were trying to do, at least the bad reviews will give you anger. And as The Clash, your countryman, wrote, anger can be power. A slight misunderstanding of your positive qualities is completely soul-sapping. Like, for instance, you say to Bruce Springsteen, oh, you're writing great songs about girls and cars. Mm-hmm. And it never crossed his mind he was writing songs about girls and cars. Then what did he do for the next two albums? He wrote songs about girls and cars. And he ended up being sucky. You know, when Sam Kennison was doing this brilliant, complicated, perfect comedy, and they said, you're just hating women and yelling about it. The next comedy album, he just hated women and yelled about it. So you have to be very, very careful. So if someone says someone's written something very good about me, I will not read it. For instance, I think you made it publish this, the thing you wrote on our Bible test on Broadway.
Yeah, that was...
Everybody said was great. Why on earth would I read that? What possible reason would I have to read that? It was not written for me. So yeah, I mean, Teller kind of snuck in under the radar. Do you read things written about you, Pip?
Worse than this.
For a while.
It's worse.
For a while, you would read like comments on like one of those pages where any dipshit can write anything they want.
It's worse than this, Penn.
What do you do?
I'm committed to the truth as a person.
There's no such thing, but go ahead.
If somebody asks me.
Despite everything that's been said in this podcast. Yeah.
If somebody says, where was I when JFK was assassinated? I'm committed to telling the truth.
On the grassy knoll,
yes.
Unborn.
Yes, yeah. And unborn. That's why they never solved it. That was the perfect crime. Okay, I may or may not have read certain opinions of this book on a site that may or may not be called The Magic Cafe.
Oh, you didn't do that, did you?
I did do that.
Oh, fuck.
And I went, as soon as I did it, I was like, oh, well, now I've just ruined the book, haven't I? Now I've ruined the whole book. Yeah. Oh, this book is ruined. What a piece of shit. Blah, blah, blah. But yes, there is...
You know that I would have physically stopped you from doing
yeah.
that as your friend.
You'd have just chainsawed my head off.
My favorite comment on there is somebody who said that...
You've read it too.
Of course I have.
Oh, God.
Somebody said we overhyped the live stream event. Literally, it was a 1.5 hour overhyped event. That was the whole pitch.
Not the point of the thing to be hyped. No, I 100%.
No, but give me get. Glenn Ally reads everything with my name in it.
Right.
So when I did the, for instance, the Spanish show, people in Spain read it and Glenn said, it was good.
Yeah.
That was entirely, the entire reaction I got there was good. And I'll tell you, I read parts of the New York Times review of us off Broadway, and that was the last thing I read. And after that, it was just a question of money. When we did the Broadway opening, after we did off Broadway, we did the Broadway opening, the producers, and Glenn wasn't there then, but they all read the reviews. And I said, how were they? And they said, money. And I said, fine. Right. That's all I needed to hear, money. If they had said, not money, I would have said, okay, when are we closing? You know, that's all I need to know. I do not want the New York Times to be writing my next show. I have no desire for that.
I agree. And this is the thing. I agree wholeheartedly. So what do you get from the bad reviews? Nothing. You just get like, for me, I just go, oh God, that makes me angry. Now I want to go and have a kitten sandwich, right? From the good reviews, they just paralyze you. And Teller literally did that. And I went, okay, I want to stop. I've done enough now. I've completed magic. I'm ready to move on. So paralyzing either ways. So maybe this is finally my moment when I get somebody else to read The Magic Cafe for me. And if you're doing it, I mean, you could just do it for me.
Oh, I don't normally do it. I was just intrigued what people thought about the live stream.
Andy, how is the Magic Cafe reviews?
I have no idea.
No, the answer is money or not money.
Money.
Okay, great.
Do you read the YouTube? Did you read the YouTube comments? I bet you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, you're going to though, right?
No.
Okay, what if Teller wrote one?
Did Teller write one?
You'll never know.
Are the YouTube comments money or no money?
Money.
Really?
I don't know. I haven't read them.
Why did you bring it up?
Because I think you will read the YouTube comments.
Oh, don't read things with your name in it.
Yeah, I want to do a trick about this. We're working on a trick. We're working a big, because I've got some great ones. We used to have this, I used to have a line in the show, I drop a baby
from the flies.
From the flies. Lands. Thank you, editing me in real time. I drop Baby from the Flies and I say, God, I can never do bits on my show unless I do like the previous 3 minutes. Hold your hands that you're going to catch a baby. It's fine. There isn't a baby up there. Apparently, there's nothing funny about dropping a baby, according to TripAdvisor. No, about killing a baby, according to TripAdvisor. Then the baby would drop, and I went, oh, my God, you just killed a baby to the person, right? So then somebody on YouTube writes, on TripAdvisor writes, there is nothing funny about killing a baby. I am a mother.
Fucker.
There is nothing funny about killing a baby. And I'm like, but hang on. I said that first. So now all that's done is like, now it's no longer a joke. It's just like, I read a TripAdvisor review where it said there's nothing funny about killing a baby. And now I'm just saying that aloud in my show. There was another time when I got invited to Shania Twain, Shania Twain's concert at the Coliseum. Mm-hmm. She asked me to come in full dragon, which I did. And then she invited me with Mr. Piffles. And then she invited me on stage for a campfire sing-along, mm-hmm. which we had. The next day, I have a Google alert on my name, got pinged.
See, you're not following my advice if you have a Google alert on your name.
But remember. How many years I've been doing this? How many years have you been doing this?
Okay.
How many years have I had Glenn Lai? How many years have you had Glenn Lai? All right? So there is nobody else who is like...
That is true.
Because some of the stuff you have to correct.
Yeah.
You know, right. some stuff, people write things, you have to correct it.
Yeah.
You have to say, actually, you know, you can correct it in a nice way. Thanks so much for coming to the show, but actually that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So this one, Shania Twain, 1 star. I love Shania Twain. She's the greatest singer of all time. I've been to all her concerts. Oh, man, I really love Shania Twain. She's beautiful. She has the voice of an angel. And she has a horse in her show. I love Shania Twain. But tonight was ruined when one stupid little English dragon went on stage and did a campfire sing-along with Shania Twain. 1 star. I was like, what did I do? And then he said, it's this sort of dragon that's probably going to turn up on one of these American talent shows any day now.
Did he really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he's right.
And I'm like, that's why you got to read the reviews, because you get gold like that.
No, you don't. You could. There's literature that's better than that, Piff. You could read other stuff during that time.
I believe,
and you'd be better.
I believe we're going to come up with that's unarguable, but I believe we're going to come up with a very good trick about reviews mm-hmm. soon.
Good.
Do you remember when I first moved to Vegas?
I do.
And I made a comment about where do we get Mr. Pills from? And I said we just drove down the I-15 and we found a load of feral chihuahuas. Mm-hmm. So we picked them up and we rehearsed with them until we found the best one, and we released the others back onto the I-15.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do with Mr. Piffles. And every time we need a new one, we just go back to the I-15.
Mm-hmm.
And some woman posted a scathing review of the show because she didn't like the way I treated Mr. Piffles on stage. And then she went and did her background research and found the interview. And she said, and I wasn't wrong, because this is how he finds his dogs. So, you know, sometimes you got to read that shit.
Yeah. Well, why don't you go through and every time you feel like reading something with your name in it, why don't you do a search for Joe Biden and read everything with his name in it?
Why would I want to do that?
Just to see something other than you. That won't hurt you.
Yeah, well, you could have chosen anything but Joe Biden.
I could have chosen anything. My first thought was Donald Trump, and I thought, nah, don't do that.
Well, what about your third thought?
My third thought would be just pick someone like Sun Ra.
Okay.
Read everything written about Sun Ra.
All right. That's not as bad as your second
thought. You're right. Sun Ra would be a good choice.
Yeah.
But I think that that I also, when I read stuff with my friend's name in it, I also think, I'm going to sum the whole thing up like this. Okay. I had an old friend from when I was like 20, and I knew her when she was in college, because I did not have the benefit of a higher education. I was about 30 then, and I was on Broadway or off Broadway, and she came into town. We went out to have lunch. We had not had lunch. We were very close friends. We were like in our 20s. And I came out, and we sat down for lunch, and she said, I ordered something, and she said, aren't you going to get shrimp? I said, what are you talking about? She said, I saw an article in the New Yorker that said you like shrimp. And I said, no, you have to know me. You can't know me through what's written about me. I do not want to know my friend Piff from what other people wrote about him. Right. I want to know about my friend Piff from my friend Piff.
Yeah. That and I think you summed it up.
Penn Jillette confesses Joe Biden is not his friend.
0 stars.
That was Penn Sunday School. By the way, buy Piff's book. Cha-cha-cha.
PiffTheMagicBook.com.
You become naked.
$69.95.
From Vanishing Ink, which Vanishing Ink has really good stuff. Now, see, this is a thing we probably don't agree on. I think the Dandy D'Artes video on How He Fooled Us should be for the general public.
Wow.
Dandy does not agree.
It's a masterclass. It really is.
Also, you can get the special edition of the book.
Yeah.
$350 from Vanishing Ink.
Cheap.
Cheap at twice the price.
Cheap at twice the price. You know we love you. And hey, Matt Donnelly, anybody to thank?
I want to thank the people who support us on Patreon, because without Patreon, there is no podcast. Thank you to Nick Dingman, Colin Durham, Lancey Minshew, Stephen White, Harlan Liam Clark, Michelle Yeiser, Brogan Hastings, Placida Scott, Damian Martin, Garth Reynolds, Adam Luce read random and he loved it, Timo Tehoff, Mark Bickenheim, Scott Kelly, Kirk Barrett, Adam Berzins, Matthew Applehands, Fractured Adventures, Carlos Alvarez, Nicholas Emerson, Michael Cornwall, Ross Devereux, Ryan Matthews, Jeff Bacher, Impossibilities Magic Show in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, Michael Tourbay, Elon Lee, Jeff Loomis, Jacob McCulley, Nicole Martin, Crazy Cat Lady Scoop, Music Man, Keith Corning, No Thank You Daddy, Rachel Hawkins, Chris Angel Tuen Un Pregunta, Jake Schneider, Pete Hoke, Kelly McCauley, Corey Mitchell, Robin Garnett, JLBusinessAdvisors.com, Love Tom and Julie Lynn, Ovi Dimitrian Jr., Jeremy R22, Winter Wierkowski, Kristen Kladick, Haiti Wabi, Michael Cohen, Mo Larry Cheese, Dr. Scoop Little, Joe Mastrangelo, Jeremiah Jenkins, Michael Kaplan, the Jelly Bean Counting Idiot and the Luckiest Husband in the World, Alexander Hoffman, Danny Olwine, Stephen Volcano, Jim, the magician who would love to perform the new Penn & Teller block trick naked, Scooped Mids, and Paul McBride. Thank you all so much.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.